stay tuned, and we're going out via 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
Coming up next, it's Fight the Empire with Per Fagering.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium on Saturday, October 26th from noon to 6 p.m. at the PSU Native American Student and Community Center in Portland. The Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium will feature artist talks and presentations by Native artists, a panel discussion, a community meal, an artist marketplace, and more. Again, that's the Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium on Saturday, October 26th from noon to 6 p.m. at the PSU Native American Student and Community Center, 710 Southwest Jackson Street in Portland. More information can be found at KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. Good morning. Good day to Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fagering, and that's the name of the show, Fight the Empire. Well, we're going to start out talking about who else, Donald Trump, who seems to be getting crazier every day. He's being criticized for dropping the Kurds as allies, and a strange letter he wrote to Turkish President Erdogan, where he told him, don't be a tough guy, don't be a fool, I will call you later. Well, that'd be good advice for Donald Trump, too. Don't be a tough guy, don't be a fool. He's been criticized very much for taking away protection for the Kurds. We've been using the Kurds in our ongoing war against Syria, against the government of Bashar Assad, and he's been criticized for letting the Kurds down, and except for one person, and that's Tulsi Gabbard, congresswoman who is still running for president, and she came down on, besides criticizing Trump, she also criticized the people who supported this, what she called a regime change war in Syria. And this is what she said. We've got to understand the reality of the situation there, which is that the slaughter of the Kurds being done by Turkey is yet another negative consequence of the regime change war that we've been waging in Syria. Donald Trump has the blood of the Kurds on his hands, but so do many of the politicians in our country from both parties who support this ongoing regime change war in Syria that started in 2011, along with many in the mainstream media who have been championing and cheerleading this regime change war. So, this war began, the real beginnings was before 2011. That's sort of when the latest outbreak of it started. And it started with protests against the Assad government. And it's a real question whether the U.S. kind of set these protests off, or whether we kind of got in on the action after they started. I've heard, I've read accounts both ways. I think Seymour Hersh has written about this. There is some evidence. A lot of people believe that the U.S. were kind of setting up this thing before 2011. But anyway, in one sense, the war against Syria began back in 1949, a long time ago, 70 years to be exact. And we overthrew an elected, Syria at that time had an elected president, and we overthrew him because he was considered a leftist, and also he was against, we wanted to have a pipeline going through Syria, going, I guess, from Saudi Arabia, bringing oil to the Mediterranean. And he opposed that pipeline, and so that's why we overthrew him. Well, a few years later, he was put back in power, but then later on, in the 50s, there was another attempt to overthrow an elected government in Syria. And this continued in other countries, too. During the 50s, we, of course, everyone knows we overthrew a democratic government in Iran in 1953. And we also overthrew an elected leader in 1958 in Iraq. And at that time, we hired a young thug named Saddam Hussein to assassinate this guy, Abdul Karim Qasem. And he was overthrown a few years later. We also overthrew a leftist government in Afghanistan, starting in 1979, where this is a Zbigniew Brzezinski's bright idea that we started arming these ultra-conservative jihadi types in Afghanistan to overthrow this pro-communist government. And one of the recipients of our aid was a guy named was the Al-Qaeda network. And what happened was we overthrew these leftist governments, secular governments, and in their place you had more right-wing, conservative, religious-type governments. And so now we complain about them. One of the reasons we are supporting this war in Syria, we claim to be fighting ISIS. Well, ISIS appeared after the disastrous invasion of Iraq by George Bush and destroyed that country. And so some of the Sunni people in Iraq, they formed this, they were a minority, but under Saddam Hussein, they were ruling Iraq. But then when Saddam Hussein was overthrown, the Shia majority took over, and the Sunnis were kind of left out in the cold, and some of them formed this super jihadi group, ISIS. And so now we are fighting them. So we're in this kind of a quagmire. It's been going on for quite a while. And what we're doing is sort of fighting the symptoms of it. Well, it's easy to criticize Trump for these kind of dumb actions he's taken now, but he didn't originate the dumb war that's been going on all this time. He's coming into the tail end of it, and maybe you could say he's making things worse, but he didn't start some of these wars. But it's very easy to criticize Trump because he has such an odious personality. You know, he's just this narcissistic bully. And in a way, he's a living example of our failing political system, because whatever you think of him, our political system put him in the White House. He didn't get as many votes as Hillary Clinton did in 2016, but he had the votes that counted in our Electoral College. So he was elected president, and he's sort of an example of how our system needs a lot of work, put it that way. You know, the U.S. likes to go around the world saying that we're the kind of the greatest living democracy around, and other countries should emulate our, you know, follow our example. But then you look at who we put in the White House, and it may not be such a great idea after all. If people want to call in with a question or comment, the number is 503-231-8187. A lot of people think, you know, when it comes to Donald Trump, there's one interesting theory, it's got something to it, that Trump never expected to win the election, that he only ran for president in 2016 as a kind of a way to promote himself and his business interests, and that he was really kind of surprised to find that he'd been elected. And some people point to a picture of Trump when he's being inaugurated, and this kind of stricken, sorrowful look on his wife's face when it really hit her that she's going to be the first lady for 4 years at least. Well, Trump got used to being in the White House pretty quickly, and perhaps he thought that he could do anything he wanted. He had the idea that we are being told quite often that the President of the United States is the most powerful person in the world, and maybe Trump believed that along with a lot of other people, and he seemed to think that, well, he could just order things and it would happen. But then he began to find out that that is really not the case. There are people in Washington who are more powerful than the president. They kind of tell him what he can do and what he can't do. And this knowledge, it kind of eats away at him and driving him further over the edge. None other than Senator Chuck Schumer warned him indirectly when he told, Rachel Maddow about Trump, that the CIA, that they can get you, quote, six ways from Sunday. And we can see that has been happening. But we do have a caller on the line. Mark is on the line. Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Pear. I just wanted to say, and of course this is off topic, but we are in the Middle East, where actually all the oil world is concentrated in that area. Of course, there's a lot in Venezuela too, and that's why we're interested in Venezuela.
Also, Russia. That's why we're interested in Russia.
Well, besides getting wiped off the face of the earth by them, mm-hmm. I guess that's another reason why we're interested in them. But I did a calculation the other day, and I found that it would take, the United States would have to build, to replace all the energy required by cars and trucks and buses, we'd have to build 400 1-gigawatt power plants.
Mm.
So that'd be 400 new nuclear power plants, new natural gas-fired power plants, or solar panels.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with solar panels is they don't work too well when you get above 25 degrees latitude. And the other problem is that you can't store electricity very well. So the end result of my calculation is that we wouldn't be able to do it.
Well, I think that is very true, that when you think of all the uses that we are contriving for energy, there's really not that, there's not going to be enough to do it all, especially if we have to switch to a renewable energy. And we keep, you know, people think that, well, we can have everything. We can have all the electronics, everything we have now, only it'll be powered by solar and wind and hydro and everything. And I don't think that is true. In the future, we're going to find out that we're going to have to, I suppose, ration or call it prioritize.
Well, anyway, the world's population, the great increase in the world's population has to do with the Industrial Revolution and the use of
that's true
fossil fuels. Other, mm-hmm. Without that, you know, back in the 1850s, there's only 1 billion people living on this planet, thereabouts. But now there are 7. So it's a double quadrupling of the population in less than 100 years. Well, a little bit more than 100 years, 150
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I've seen graphs showing our use of energy and our population, and sort of these graphs track pretty perfectly. In other words, it's a way of saying that our use of energy has enabled the world to support the number of people that it does right now. But without that energy, the world may not be able to support all those people. Certainly not in the style that people are living now. We talk about, population growth, the population that uses the most energy. You know, it's not the, the peasants of Africa and South America. It's the rich people of Europe and North America.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'll tell you another thing. Tulsi Gabbard is the only Democrat on the slate that I like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's pretty good.
She is.
Did you see the debate last night or the other night?
No, I didn't. I don't watch them. But but I can imagine that she took care of herself pretty well there in those debates.
Well, she didn't get very much speaking time as far as I can see, but when she did, she kind of made her presence felt. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you, Bear.
Number to call is 503-231-8187. And we've been talking about Trump's latest his letter to Turkish President Erdogan, giving him good advice. Don't be a tough guy. Don't be a fool. Well, that's good advice for all of us, I think. But anyway, we've been talking about, Trump's odious personality. But one thing that, we left off where we talked about, the problems that he is dealing with right now. He did not create them. He inherited them. And you can say he's making them worse. That's certainly a possibility. But one thing he did, he kind of threw the empire off track. And this goes into Ukraine. And the whole in Ukraine, of course, involves our kind of undercover war against Russia. We are actually in a kind of a hidden, well, not so well hidden. It's not overt. It's not an outright war, but it is a serious, deadly conflict with Russia. And you could say that began in the 1990s, after the Soviet Union fell, and Boris Yeltsin was the president of Russia, and he allowed Western financiers and con artists to come in and make off with Russian assets cheap. They bought up Russian energy and companies and everything else on the cheap, and this is the origin of the oligarchs we hear about now. And this went on for almost 10 years. In 1996, Yeltsin was up for re-election, and he was very unpopular, but the U.S. sent in a team of PR people, and they mounted this kind of very expensive campaign and got Yeltsin re-elected, and so the looting went on. And it had a serious effect on the Russian economy. finally, Yeltsin's alcoholism got the better of him, and he stepped down or didn't run again for a third term, and that's when Vladimir Putin took over. And one thing that Putin was sort of an unknown quantity. People talk about how he was the KGB officer, which is true. But after he left the KGB, he spent some time working for the mayor of St. Petersburg, who was considered quite a liberal in Russia. But anyway, Putin became president, and to the surprise of a lot of people, he stopped the looting that was going on. And then, and I think that the U.S. has really never forgiven him for that. So, one way of getting at Russia was to change the government in Ukraine. Ukraine has had a long association with Russia. They speak a very similar language. The whole Russian nation originated in Kiev back in the early Middle Ages. And the U.S., you know, they installed in 2011, Ukraine was run by President Viktor Yanukovych, who was considered corrupt, like many other politicians in Ukraine. And but he was elected by people in eastern Ukraine who are sort of more Russian-oriented, Russian-speaking. And in the year, I think it was in 2011, the EU and IMF sort of were trying to push a deal on Ukraine. Their economy was in horrible shape. And so the IMF came up with this plan that they would lend Ukraine, oh, I think $1.5 billion, but that Ukraine would have to really do some serious austerity. And so the EU and the IMF were pushing this plan on Ukraine, and that's when Putin, as president of Russia, he offered Ukraine a much better deal, where Russians would lend Ukraine many more billions of dollars, or rubles, whatever, and they would also give them subsidized gas. And so Yanukovych, he went for that deal because it was a better deal, which outraged the U.S. and the West in general. And so that's when this kind of overthrow began, which culminated in the year 2014. And it was outright interference. You had Victoria Nuland, who was Assistant Secretary of State under Hillary Clinton. She was there in the streets of Kiev passing out cookies to these rioters. She was also recorded on the phone talking with the ambassador to the Ukraine about who would, once Yanukovych is out of office, who would we put in his place. And she was quoted saying, "Yats the man," a fellow named Yatsenyuk, who did indeed become president of Ukraine for a while. She also had some scurrilous things to say about the EU. Well, what happened then was that this was in 2014. So we'd already driven out an elected government in Ukraine, replaced them with a person to our liking. And in 2016, most people expected Hillary Clinton to become president, to win the election. And that once that happened, then this whole Ukraine project would continue. Well, it didn't work out that way. Trump, however, whether he intended to become president or not, he did. And so with Trump in the White House, this whole Ukraine project got derailed. And Now, of course, I think Trump's days are numbered. The impeachment proceedings are going on, and I just saw a headline in the news this morning that there might even be an impeachment vote before Thanksgiving. So after Trump is gone, I think a lot of people expect the Ukraine project to resume. And the fact that the main impeachment charge against Trump is over his dealings in Ukraine and his kind of a legalistic thing to me is that he was supposedly offering some inducement to the president of Ukraine to dig up dirt on Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden, who we might recall was rewarded after the Ukraine government fell. And that was Joe Biden's project, by the way. And his son Hunter was given a position on the board of this energy corporation, paying him $50,000 a month. Well, whatever Hunter Biden may have done or not have done, this is obviously a case of this government in Ukraine, of this gas company trying to curry favor with the new rulers of Ukraine. So it's certainly something to be investigated. And whether it should not be investigated, say, at the behest of Donald Trump, but somebody should certainly investigate what's going on with Joe Biden in Ukraine. And so the fact that this charge is the main one that's been talked about against Donald Trump makes me believe that that it sort of sets a stage for the after Trump is removed from office, which I think is going to happen, that the whole regime change project in Ukraine continues, and hopefully that according to the sort of the imperial powers in Washington, that this will lead to the end of Putin's reign in Russia. So this is something I would keep and I will be watching for. I don't expect Trump to last very long. I think he'll be out of office. And I think we should keep in mind who replaces him. I would have liked to talk some more about Trump's ongoing sort of collision course with the CIA. And why was that when Trump is gone, I think they will be back in power again. And it could be some very troubling times ahead. So I want to thank people for listening and thank people for calling in. This has been Fight the Empire. My name is Pierre Fogring, and stay tuned to KBOO, your radio station. Thank you.
This is KBOO Portland. Time is 10 o'clock. Coming up next, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. Dennis discusses the Turkish invasion of Syria and features a speech by Greg Palast. At 11, it's Between the Covers. Bettany Grabo interviews author Nadine Lishan Ahmad. And at 11:30, it's Express Yourself. Host Jai interviews spoken word poet Meech. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. And if you want a third way to listen to all your favorite KBOO programming, then download our mobile app today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Resilience in Action, a fundraiser of Living Yoga on Saturday, October 19th at 4:30 p.m. at the Eleanor in Portland. Living Yoga's mission is to foster healing and resilience through trauma-informed yoga. They provide 35 weekly trauma-informed yoga classes in corrections and reentry, addiction treatment and recovery, and community health programs throughout the Portland metro area. Resilience in Action fundraiser features live storytelling, a panel discussion, drinks, food, a silent auction, and more. Again, that's Resilience in Action, a fundraiser for Living Yoga on Saturday, October 19th at 4:30 p.m. at the Eleanor, 1605 Northwest Everett Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.